Hey, everybody. Glad you're back with us for another edition of Catching Up with Simo and Shep. He is the Craig Monroe. I'm Matt Shepard. We're excited to have you on board as we talk a lot of different things, including baseball, the 4th of July traditions, and our favorite comedy movies. It's coming up next on Catching Up with Simo and Shep. All right, good stuff taking place here throughout the city all weekend long, and we're glad that we were part of it because the city of Detroit does things so very well. We'll dive into that a little bit later on. How was your weekend, my friend?
Well, I had a nice weekend. Mm-hmm. Actually, I had a great weekend.
But
there is a but. You knew there was a but coming, yeah. Right? There is a but. So this weekend, Shep, I helped my buddy move.
Okay, that's a big step, man. I mean, how well do you know him? And is he a good friend?
Extremely, since okay. I moved here, you know, when I moved here 4 years ago, his kid plays on the same basketball team as my kids, and we became very close. Now, with that being said, my wife and I get over there about 10 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
I didn't get home till 8 p.m.
That's a long move.
Man, I walked into this house, and God knows I love him.
Okay.
But they just wasn't prepared. You got to turn the keys in on Monday. That's today.
Okay.
There was nothing in boxes. It was just
what?
It was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Is he single?
No, he's married.
Wow.
But they both work.
Okay, I get it.
10 hours a day.
You're planning. You're moving. Okay. So he's moving from a house to another house.
No, or from an apartment to another apartment.
Oh, okay. So how much stuff can there be?
Oh, there was a ton of stuff. Seriously, I counted, I want to believe, 100 and some shoe boxes.
100 shoe boxes?
Yeah, but well, between
wait,
him and
are they
wife.
Full of shoes or are they full of
no,
knickknacks?
No, they're full of shoes.
Oh, my God.
They're full of shoes. And I couldn't believe how many pair of shoes that him and his wife had.
First of all, who saves the boxes for that many shoes?
Well,
that's first and foremost.
Yeah, he's a shoe guy, though.
Okay. I get it, but 100, and you're in an apartment? Shouldn't you have a walk-in closet if you have 100 pairs of shoes each?
Well, they did upgrade the closet, so they do have a bigger closet now. So they're going to be able to put them all up and display them, I guess. But how many pairs of shoes can you wear?
I mean, I have just as basic. I might have 12 pairs.
I'm probably close to that. Maybe a little bit less than that. Probably 8.
So you move this guy.
I'm hurting
and,
today,
and his
Shep,
family.
To you.
Oh,
I'm hurting.
Yeah.
I mean, that was more work than I've done in a long time.
So you didn't just move him. You had to help him pack.
All of it.
Oh, that's ridiculous. What'd you get out of it? So if you're doing that for me, the minimum I'm doing, okay, I've got a case of beer or whatever you want to drink.
Yeah.
I'm feeding you lunch and dinner because that's a long day, right? 10
I
to 8?
I got a little dinner, though. I peed away. I went to Pete away and got some Mediterranean food.
Okay,
first time I've ever been there.
Okay, well, that's a free plug for Pete away. Good for you.
But it was good. It was good.
All right.
I liked it.
I just, you had to have the conversation with Cassie that, wait a minute, this is kind of messed up. If you know, and she's organized.
100%.
Okay. If you know that you're moving, you are planning in advance. So Casey's
probably a month in advance.
Right.
Planning.
So she's already boxing things up and labeling them.
Kitchen,
right?
Bedroom.
Right.
Yeah, all
so
that.
You've gone to U-Haul or FedEx, whatever it may be, and you've got the boxes.
Yeah.
You've already packed them. You've written it down, and you've taped them shut.
Yes.
So you know which room. My wife is so careful with that stuff. She puts down the room in which it goes.
Yeah. I mean, that's being organized, for sure.
Right.
This is a young couple. I'm going to give them.
You're making excuses now. That's what you're doing. Well, oh, I like them. It's a young couple.
They're good.
They're not organized.
They're just not. But all in all, the boys came with me, and they helped their buddy put his room together, and they put in the LED lights up. And
come on,
it was a bonding moment for them.
There's got to be a point of your twins going, Dad, this is bullshit.
No, they did.
Why am I helping these people with so much?
No, they did. They finally went to the truck and they just sat in the truck and they're like, we're not going back out there.
Good for them.
I was like, dude, you guys done? I'm like, you guys are done? They go, yeah, no, that's it. I'm done.
Good for you, man. How far was the move?
It was just around. It was just around the corner. It wasn't far.
Within a mile.
We put two trucks, way less than a mile. Couple of trucks, and we pulled right up, put the stuff on the back, go unloaded, load it, go back, load it up. We just kept going back. And
oh,
forth.
So you're making multiple trips.
Oh, he took about 10 trips.
So he didn't rent a van.
Oh, no.
He didn't rent any type of U-Haul truck.
No, not at all. We used my goodness. Truck, and he had borrowed his cousin's truck, and yeah, we... He owes me big time, but he'll pay me. God. He's okay.
You got to cash in on that favor.
Oh, I'm
at some point.
I'm definitely going to cash in.
That's good. I played a little golf.
How'd you hit him?
I hit him okay. I've come to the realization, and I was playing with a mutual friend of ours, Terry Mills.
Mm, great guy.
He's a fantastic. I love that man. The thing that bothers me about, and I love the sport, you know that. I've come to the realization there's only so much room for me to improve. I mean, I've got a ton of room to improve. I'm not getting where I want to be.
Yeah.
I'm not getting.
That's the frustrating part for me about golf. If you don't practice, don't expect yourself to be good.
I know.
I shot a 94 Friday. We went to Oakland University, played khaki.
Yeah.
I personally think playing there is tough.
Oh, I think they're two championship courses. I love them.
Very tough. And I was okay with the 94 because I don't practice at all. And I probably play four times a year. So it's not like my expectations are very low.
It's all about expectations, right?
Yeah, my expectations are very low.
Okay.
But your expectations, I play with you. You still expect a lot. You want to be in the 80s. That's just you. You want to be at least 80.
I want to be in the low 80s.
Yeah, like 82, 83?
82, 83 I can handle. But eventually I get in a car and I think I left how many shots out there. Here's the issue I have with golf for me, and I think it's a lot like when you're in the gym. Some type of ego, testosterone takes over, and you feel like you're really better than you are or you're stronger than you really are. So if I'm playing with people who are playing from the blues, so you've got the championship, you got the blues, you got the whites, and you've got the reds. I should be playing whites. But when I get on the tee and I'm playing with my boys, because they're younger, because they hit the ball so much further, they want to play blues. It's hard for me to watch them hit blues and then drive up 25 yards to the whites and say, yes, at the end of the day, I beat you, or I lost to you.
Usually
it's the former. But
technically, you lost if you played from the whites and they played from the blues.
Technically.
Yeah. Because it's just...
It's too much of an advantage.
Yeah, it's too much
of an advantage. But I get talked into it. So here's what I get. My youngest son always says, Dad, come on. The difference is what? 300 yards total? He said, come on, that's like one hole. I mean, just play from the blues. So he suckers me into doing it. It's my fault, but he suckers me into doing it. I play from the blues... And I struggle.
You struggle from the well. Did you struggle on both sides? That's the question.
So I shot really well on the front. The back, I labored a little bit. Yeah. I ended up tying them, which is fine, which tells you right there maybe the blues aren't so bad. But I'm hitting 190 to 200 in on long par fours. Far.
Were you gassed? Because it was hot.
Oh man, I was super.
It was hot.
Super tired. Yeah, but. I'm recharged, ready to go. Talk a little baseball with you. We got the 4th of July holiday. Mm-hmm. This is the week of the 4th of July holiday. I'm pretty fired up about that because I love getting together with friends and family and honoring our great country. What's your holiday tradition?
Well, first of all, I'm looking for a party. I'm looking for a barbecue party somewhere to go hang out with some friends around here. Okay. Well, since I
just helped a friend move, but I get it.
Yeah, but
he should have you over.
Like a barbecue or something. But no, back at home and. That's what we would do. I mean, just we would all get together. And I got a big family, you know. And we'd barbecue. We'd meet up at somebody's house. It might be my Aunt Lily's, my Uncle Milton's. But we're all getting together. There's no quit. We're all getting together. And it is a party.
Are you a barbie? Do you do the barbecuing? Are you that good on the grill?
Absolutely not.
Oh, you're not.
But I am working on it.
Casey's doing it?
No. Casey's making, she's making the size. She's a big size.
So who does the barbecue then?
Well, my uncle will try.
Okay.
A couple of cousins know how to barbecue. But I have no problem with the grill, though. I get on the grill. Unfortunately, I cheat. I got a gas grill.
How is that cheating?
Well, they say if you don't have the chips and the coals, then you're not getting that smoky
taste.
You can
always add that with a pellet, can't you? You can add some pellets.
See, you're giving me some advice. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
I like it.
You can do that with the wood and stuff. It's the wood that makes it good, no doubt.
I'll try that.
You can do all that. My concern was when you says, my uncle tries. You screw a barbecue, that's a bad sign. Right?
It is.
Because it's got to age under that grill.
Yeah,
so you got to start it early.
It's not really, I think everybody wants it now, you know, quick.
Yeah.
And you just rush it. You can't rush it. You've got to make a day of it. Or
you
prepare
do.
It, prep it. And so I've started to do that a little bit. So my barbecue is getting better.
Dry rub, wet rub?
I like wet rub.
Me too.
Yeah. I like a little wet rub.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I do. I like a
But you got to start. This is not cooking burgers or brats or hot dogs.
This is real.
You got to start it early in the morning, slow cook it throughout the day, and then get there. The fortunate thing for me is all three of my sons are really good cooks.
Oh, nice.
Okay. So they get all involved in a lot of the cooking shows, and they know what they're doing with that stuff. And we haven't necessarily – I've done barbecue a few times. It's a trial and error sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'd rather go and buy them. And just warm them up because some people just doing that well. You know what I mean?
That is true. Well, so what do you do when the boys are cooking?
Yeah.
Because they've got it handled. Does dad just kick back and just, you know, have a couple pops?
I deserve that, I think. So, yeah, that's exactly what I do. I think I deserve it. I commit myself to saying that's what I'm going to do.
That's good then.
So that's good. All right. So good traditions.
Yeah.
I love that. Similar traditions. I'm sure a lot of people have the same tradition at home. In the
you
barbecue.
Guys play games? See, like we play games. We play spades. We play dominoes.
Okay.
There might be even a karaoke machine. Like, you just never know. Yeah,
getting on the mic.
I like getting on the mic.
Yeah.
I can't sing. But.
We don't do that. I can't say that we've done that. I mean, my son, Sean, who helps us with this show, he's in a band called Anti-Ghost. He'll take out the acoustic guitar and play a little bit. We have some fun.
That's why I picked up the guitar. I don't know where I go. I'm going to the guitar store, and I got a guitar.
Yeah. Oh, did you?
And it's been years that I've been trying to learn how to play this.
I remember
this
when you brought it on
thing.
A trip once. Yeah.
And I tell you what, G, C, and D are my friend. They're my friends. That's what I've got right now.
Well, you get that to perfection at some point, then you can shift to the electric guitar, and that'd be really cool.
Now, that is a goal, but man, it's challenging. You know, trying to move my fingers and strum at the same time, it's been a challenge.
Yeah.
It's been a challenge. Doesn't have anything to do with athleticism, I can tell you that.
Oh, absolutely not. But some people, like my son Sean, it's self-taught. So you're teaching yourself. He doesn't read music. No, can you read music?
Videos. No, I cannot read music.
Okay.
I really got it because, you know, you want to be around the campfire. And I just want to play 10, 12 good songs and sing along where everybody can just have a good time. You know?
Have you written any songs?
No.
Could you write a song?
You know, I don't like to doubt myself. Yes, I believe I could.
Okay. So maybe think of maybe a couple of bridges or so, and then come back to us with that. Can you do that?
Over my head, bridges.
What do you think of the new decor?
I love it. I love it. I love the photos, by the way.
Okay. You and I have collected a lot of photos over the years.
Yeah.
So let's go through them real quick in case people can't see exactly. We got Reggie Jackson, you and I in Houston.
You were like a little kid, too, that day.
Yeah, I did not like Reggie Jackson as a player.
No?
Because he played A for the Yankees. They won a lot. I thought he was a bit of a hot dog, but
he
was a clutch hot dog. So you and I getting the chance to meet him and talk about some of those days was pretty cool.
I was
and
kind of like timid. Like I was like, Chip, do I go? Do we go now? I don't know. But then he was awesome. He was inviting.
Yeah, he was really cool. The reason he's in a Houston uniform, in case people wonder, is because he was special assistant when Simo and I were there at Minute Maid Park. Just on the other side is Don Mattingly, who I think should be in the Hall of Fame.
I think so, too.
He's a 9-time Gold Glover. He's a batting champion. He's not in the Hall of Fame, and he should be.
That was one of my favorite days, the favorite moment there, taking a picture with Don Mattingly, the hit man.
Yeah.
I mean, that swing, how he used to, I mean, just to get through the baseball, hit it to all fields. He's a pure hitter.
Yeah.
He was pure.
Captain of the Yankees, and that's when he was – an assistant. I think he was the bench coach for Toronto.
For Toronto at the time, yes.
John Gibbons there in Toronto. Closer to you on the next shelf is us with John Kruk in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think Kruk.
You talk about a card. You talk about a guy who's willing to laugh it up and poke fun at himself and poke fun at the game in general. That was him. He looks nervous there, but he wasn't nervous.
No, not at all. He's one of my faves. Like, you know, the guy that just light. It's just his aura. It's like he loves it. He jokes. He has a good time. He's funny. He's funny as hell, actually.
That was the same weekend that you and I were there and Dave Dombrowski came into the booth. And we talked with Dave Dombrowski for about 20 minutes.
Remember? Special? That was special.
That was a lot of fun.
Because I hadn't had it. And obviously, when he was a GM here in Detroit, you would have conversations. But he was known as the bad guy.
Oh, yeah, he was.
I'll be honest. We all stayed the hell away from Dombrowski because if Dombrowski was coming, It wasn't good for you.
But a really good dude.
Great dude. But I enjoyed that conversation. It was a different kind of conversation, more intimate.
Oh, I agree.
Conversation that I've ever had with him. And so I know I left there with a different thought and feeling about Dave Dombrowski, given the fact that I was in New York and he freaking calls me at 6-something in the morning and gets me to Leland's room. And the rest.
Okay, let me relax a little bit.
Okay. So, no, here's what happened. I get a call at 6-something in the morning. Meet me, Dombrowski. Meet me down in Leland's hotel room.
Okay. I'm surprised you answered because usually
that's way too early.
You're a morning guy.
That's
way too early for me.
And, of course, you go in. You get the handshakes. And I can see Leland. He's got a little, you know, you can tell he's a little emotional. He's really an emotional guy, you know. And, you know, basically here's the conversation. It goes, well, we think Cam Maven is ready. And so, Craig, we're going to designate you for assignment. I go, huh? This came off one of the best years I've ever had. What are you talking about? And it was brief. Mm-hmm. Shake your hands. Thank you for everything that you've done. But yeah, we're going to try to trade you. But we've got 72 hours and yada yada yada.
It's a very direct conversation.
It's a direct.
Yeah. And it's quick just like, and cut it off.
Good. Like, it's like, oh, it's so heartbreaking when they call you in that office and they let you go. So, but that happens. So, my thought for Dave Dombrowski, I'm thinking, you know what I was thinking?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't want to talk to him. But when he came in, it was different. It was like, I was like, you know, he was just doing his job, you know?
Yeah, tough decisions, man.
They have to make tough decisions. So, I'm not mad at Dombrowski at all. I actually appreciate everything that he's done and giving me the opportunity. And so, I felt better after that intimate conversation with him.
Yeah.
You know, other than the last conversation I had with him that didn't go so well.
Yeah, pretty genuine guy who's won a World Series in Florida and Boston as well. And he's got Philadelphia playing well. Philadelphia's, that's a really good baseball team. And they've been staying atop the East and actually surpassed the Mets without Bryce Harper, who's going to come back sometime soon. The funny thing about John Kruk, folks, is when Simo and I were looking for him, oftentimes when we would go into baseball cities and ballparks, especially for game one, we would look for the opposing TV and radio play-by-play and color analysts just to talk to them about their team. You know, we've done our research, but wanted to talk to them, see if
they've
got any
stories.
Different
when you hear from them. Yeah, because they see it every day.
Because they would do that for us, too, and we would constantly, you know, feed them with information what our observations have been. We go into a back room where John Kruk is. There's a couch. It's a crowded room, all right? So the radio play-by-play guy there, the TV play-by-play. And there's John Kruk laying down on a couch in pretty close to Long John underwear. I mean, you know, just not looking TV ready. How's that?
Not at all.
And just talking about whatever comes to mind. And we just had a fantastic conversation. It was a lot of fun. So that's where John Kruk. And then down here is us with Pudge Rodriguez, who is in our home booth promoting some of the things that he was selling, but more importantly, telling us some really good stories that you guys had together.
Yeah, some really great stories. Where my first home run, the first guy hit home plate, top of the stairs, man. We'll never forget it. Growing up in Texas, watching the Rangers, freaking idolizing Pudge Rodriguez, coming around the bases, get to home plate, hit it, walk, going into the dugout, emotionally super excited, freaking double high five me, the hardest double high five I've ever had, and it was fired up. He was fired up for me. Getting to play with him in Texas and then getting to play with him in Detroit. He works his ass off. Do you hear me? Mm. People think that he's catching 9 innings. Mm. Everybody's gone. He's going back to the field, running poles, foul pole to foul pole. I mean, every single day. I mean, this guy here worked. And that's one of the things that I took from him. You got to work, man, to be great. And he was great. He's great.
Yep. Best catcher you've ever played with, for sure.
For sure, hands down, the best.
Is he the best catcher of all time? That's the big debate.
I think we're gonna have that debate, and I think we'll have that debate forever. Johnny Bench was incredible.
Yeah, Carlton Fisk was damn good. Yeah. Yogi Berra was unbelievable.
But I you know, obviously because I played with him, I lean towards Pudge Rodriguez.
I think we all lean toward the era in which we were, you know, at least fans. If not born, at least fans. You know what I mean? I can't say that that Bill Freehan is, although I think he's a borderline Hall of Famer. He's one of the best catchers in history that probably doesn't get talked nearly enough when you're an 11-time All-Star and I think a five or six-time Gold Glover. He was so impactful. Lance Parrish, incredible.
Yeah, you know, I love the Big Wheel.
He's going to be one of our guests later on when we do our live show at the Palladium here in Birmingham. But Pudge Rodriguez is viewed as elite with a very few other catchers of all time. I don't know if Roy Campanella is in that conversation, but
you can put him in that.
Yeah, but Ivan Rodriguez is definitely in there.
You know what I loved about the play, watching Pudge hit, and Shep, no lie, I'm in the dugout. They got the best view, right?
Yeah.
I'm dead serious. I felt like the ball would just stop for him, and then he would just whack it wherever he wanted to. That's how much timing and rhythm that he had. Where when he was going well, it was a thing of beauty. I mean, his rhythm. He had a little double tap, pick it up and get back there. And I'm serious. It was like the ball was just coming in slower than it did to me for me. And that's one of the things I ask him about all the time. I'm like, dude, how does it stop for you? How does it slow down? He goes, Timo, it's not stopping. I go, well, that's what it looks like when I'm watching you. It looks like it stops. And it was all because he told me it's all because of his timing. He would get started early to give himself enough time to slow the ball down. And he, I mean, Rudy Jaramillo, that's who he learned that from.
Yeah.
Who was his hitting coach in Texas. So those are some special conversations that you can have in the dugout, you have in the clubhouse, on the plane, when you're traveling. And he was always great. He was always good giving information. Wanted us to be better. Wanted to see us get to that level that, well, nobody can get to that level. Not everybody gets to that level, but
right.
He was special.
With Jim Leland in Florida, helping them win a world championship, and a guy when Leland came to Detroit, Leland made sure Pudge Rodriguez understood the rules of Leland and made sure he told him, look, you've got to be on board, and if you're not going to do stuff, right, you know the story.
Oh, there was a big
Gene Lamont, who's his good friend. When
great story.
You're not going to show him up. Share it with
him. Yeah, Pudge had a missile. I mean, an absolute rocket to first base. Mm-hmm. It was an absolute missile. One hops the right fielder. Magnio's at second base. Pudge hits first base, and he looks up and looks over at third base, and Magnio didn't score. And he throws his hands up. Right. I wish he wouldn't have done that, because we all had to feel his wrath. We felt Jim Leland's wrath. When we got that game was over, we got in the clubhouse, and everybody, you know, we're scrambling. We're all trying to get out of there. We're getting dressed. And he comes in, I mean, fired up. And he starts to yell, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? I mean, you're going to show up my coach. That'll never happen here. And he started getting close to Pudge's face, and he started, I mean, I thought he's going to bump him in his head. I thought he's going to headbutt him. He was getting so close to him. But you can hear a pin drop in that room for us young players watching Jim Leland go after a Hall of Fame player. Mm-hmm. He set the presence right away. This is how we're going to do things. We're going to play the game hard. We're going to play 9 full innings every single day, and we're going to respect each other, and you're not going to show up my coaches. He made it clear. So once you heard that as a player, young player, you're saying, who the hell am I? If he'll do that to Pudge, this old man's not to be played with. Guys, we got to do things the right way. We've got to respect each other. We got to love each other. We got to play for each other. And that, for me, was why I felt like my team in 06 is why we won, why we played at such a high level. Baseball was fun, because even when we lost and guys would be moping or turn the music off, he'd come in there, what are you doing? Turn the music on. You got another game tomorrow. You know, he would just make you feel different, make you feel like you're better.
Was
than
that early in the season that he did that?
No, it was early. Yeah, it was early.
It had to be, didn't
it? It was early in the season where he set the tone, and he just wasn't playing about how we were going to do things. Mm. And if he said, you know, he'll take his chances with this team, but if I get beat, I'm not going to get beat laying down.
Yeah.
You know, he's basically like saying, hey, every day, 9 innings, give it to me, and he'll take his chances with
that
team.
So when people say that 06 team was fill in the blank, Maglio Ordonez's team, whomever, okay, could be Pudge Rodriguez. Really, it was Jim Leland's team, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. He set the tone right away. Even going into spring training, he sent a few key guys letters and talked about how we were going to take the field. You know, we're going to take the field like the Yankees, the teams that won championships. Mm-hmm. He wanted that, or he wanted to change the narrative. Because, again, at this time, we had scuffled so many years after the 84 Tigers. Right. This team wasn't that good. And so when he came in, he wrote this letter about taking the field, how we're going to take the field, how we're going to play the game. It was going to be 9 full innings every single day. And it touched everybody. It really grabbed the attention of all the players that got this letter. And it made us realize what we were up for and what we were in for. We had a guy that was going to back you. He's going to go to bat for you every day. He was gonna be that sounding board too. Like when things didn't go right, he wasn't gonna shy away. He was gonna take. We didn't play the game the right way. We got to play it better. You know, he just owns everything, and that's when you have a manager that wears his emotions on his sleeve. Those are the guys I'd run through the wall for. I'd run through the wall for Leland right now because he would make me believe I could. That's the kind of confidence that he instilled in us.
Yeah, it's really cool that he oftentimes gives credit to everybody else, but he had to set the tone with that team. And I think it's really important that not just the young guys bought in, but a guy like Pudge Rodriguez bought in, a guy like Kenny Rogers and Maglio Daniels.
Oh, Kenny was great for the
all
for
those
the pitchers,
guys
though,
but made sure that they understood what he expected and wanted out of them and went about it the right way.
I'm going to tell you some other guys, the other guys that were, you know, we talk about Jim Leland, obviously the manager. He was the heartbeat of our team. I truly believe that. Mm-hmm. He won't take that credit. But guys like Carlos Guillen.
Sure.
Carlos Guillen was one of our leaders on our squad. When we got Polanco became an instant leader on our squad. Yeah. So you had guys that played the game the right way, mm-hmm. expected his teammates to play the right way, and there was an incident with Carlos Guillen and I, where I didn't run the ball out or something. I struck out and the ball just got away from the catcher and I ran, but I didn't as if I was going to make it, you know.
Yeah.
And after the game, he comes up and he chastises me about it. You rarely see that. Well, you see it, but you don't. You know, there's some veterans that they do it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Ginn had a way of doing it the right way.
Was this in the clubhouse?
It was in the clubhouse.
Okay.
And see, because you don't want to embarrass.
Before the media got in, right?
Yeah, yes, yes. You don't want to embarrass your teammates, but this was before the media got in. Okay. And he just let me know, listen, we're going to run balls out. We're trying to win. If you're trying to win games, you can't do it this way. Mm-hmm. And it did. That's the one moment I remember, like, damn. You know what? Let my teammates down there. Because what if I would have been safe and kept the inning alive? Who knows, you know, what would have happened. So those are the guys that, like, stuff you don't hear, you know, the leaderships. And for me, Carlos Guillen was definitely one of the leaders.
I've said that about athletes for a long time. Because things are so direct with athletes, it can be a good thing, you know, where you're going to take – the suggestions in this case or the criticism.
Yeah.
And you can always give it back, but there is going to be a very clear understanding of what that person is telling you and their problem with you.
Yeah, and it's basically looking in the mirror, own your shit. Let's just call it what it is. That's what it is.
Yeah, for sure.
And then and it's so crazy to me too, because even when you guys, the media would come in and then guys would run away, they don't want to talk. It's like, listen, dude. You got to look in the mirror. Be honest with yourself. Yeah. Should you have made the play? 9 times out of 10, they're going to tell you I should have made the play. But don't make excuses.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we need to talk about. We don't make excuses. We didn't play well. And I think, again, that clubhouse, that's how we operated. Guys don't make excuses.
You brought up the 84 Tigers because it had been so long. Still, this team or this franchise still hasn't won a championship since the 84 Tigers. So it's been 41 years.
Yeah.
Which has been way too long. Did you get tired of hearing about 84? And the reason I ask that is because I remember when our friend Kirk Gibson won in 88 with the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. And the Dodgers since that time had become getting close and closer and closer. And I remember Clayton Kershaw telling Kirk Gibson in so many words or telling other people in Los Angeles, we're tired of hearing about the 88 Dodgers. And the response had always been, well, then do something about it.
Absolutely.
The Tigers had, in 84, got tired of hearing about the 68 Tigers, which was the third championship in Tigers history, 35, 45, 68, now 84. Did you get tired of hearing about 84 all the time?
No, I didn't. I mean, I respect the hell out of that team. Think about it, 35 and 5.
Yeah, 104 wins overall.
Here's why you respect the team. Like the 84 Tigers, and how you admired what they were able to accomplish. Most of the guys that won championship and won that 84 championship, they didn't win the championship because they was at the big leagues. They won that in the minor leagues, playing together, coming up, learning how to win together in the minor leagues. Kind of like what the Tigers are putting together right now.
Sure.
Where they're building within. That's why I respect that 84 Tigers team. Not only just because of their record and how they started and they won the World Series, it's because it was these guys became they were friends, they were brothers from the beginning, mm-hmm. and they were doing it in the minor leagues, and it was inevitable that it was going to happen in the big leagues. And so, like, no, I never got tired of hearing about that 84 team. Now, it drove me to want, you know, for us to win a championship, mm. And damn it, we didn't, and we should have. We were the better team.
Absolutely.
But no, I love that team. I love talking to those guys now. I love the stories.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to talking to Dave Rosemack. I mean, he's great. He's a character on that squad. I can't wait to talk to Kirk Gibson. I mean, I've heard some of those great stories. Trammell and Lou Whitaker, man. I've heard a lot of great stories about how that team played the game and how they held each other accountable.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will look at it. They oftentimes see the past and they get a little tired of it, especially if it's younger people who never saw it.
Man.
But there was something special about them winning in Montgomery and Evansville and places where they were, and then coming to the Tigers and winning together, Trammell and Whitaker, of course, and then how they kind of filtered in some of the missing pieces, a Chet Lemon, a Larry Herndon, a Darrell Evans, a Dave Bergman. But those guys, Trammell and Whitaker and Brookins and Gibson and Parrish and Morris and Petrie and Rosema, those were all grade-A dudes, but all held each other accountable.
Yeah, they did.
And I think people have to remember that it's okay to have some thick skin holding oneself accountable. The same thing happened with the Pistons in the 80s, man. I mean, Bill Laimbeer and Isaiah Thomas made sure, you come to this team, hey, Mark Aguirre, hey, Adrian Dantley, here's what's expected of you.
Yeah.
If you're not going to realize that or make sure you're part of us, then you don't belong here. That's a good thing.
It's a great thing. And I think more teams and more players should hold each other accountable.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't get away with anything.
Yeah. So we bring up the Tigers. Tarek Skubal, earlier in the week, matched a career high with 13 strikeouts. And he did this on the national stage in a 3-0 shutout of Minnesota to give Detroit yet another series win. When he won that game, like I mentioned, a career-high 13 strikeouts in just 7 innings, 94 pitches, which made me at home just go.
You were scratching your head, right?
I to a certain extent, I get it. But on the other hand, it bothers the hell out of me. It really does. And I think a lot of fans are like that. But in the last 25 years, Tarek Skubal was just the third Tigers pitcher to go 4-0 or better in the month of June. Verlander, 2011. Scherzer 2013 tells you something about it. Are we getting to the point where we should be talking about him as one of the greatest Tigers pitchers of all time?
I personally think so. Now, I know, you know, we talk about years. Everybody wants to tell, you know, you got to do it for more years. But as a player, when you're watching a guy, for an example, I'll go here, mm-hmm. Verlander.
Yeah.
Being in left field and watching Justin Verlander, as he continued to develop and grow and get better, become who he is to this mm-hmm. to this day, one of the greatest pitchers, I believe, of all time. I thought something special every day was going to happen. Every time he took the bump, something special could happen. Something historical could happen. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how he looked. That's the presence that he had on the mound every day. It's like, damn, he might throw a freaking no-hitter today. That's the kind of stuff that he had. I'm starting to feel like that about Tarek Skubal. Every time he takes the bump, he's must-see TV.
I agree.
You have to watch him. And not only do you love his ability, his arm, he throws 100 miles per hour, the filthy changeup. Mm-hmm. You know, he sprinkles in the slider. He elevates, ups and down, moves out, changes eye level, all that great stuff. But it's the dog for me in him. Mm-hmm. He wants all the smoke. He doesn't back down. He's a guy that you want to be in the trenches with. I want to play with Tarek Skubal right now. He's a guy I want to play behind. I'm diving in the walls. I'm jumping in the walls. I'm doing anything I possibly can. When you do that every day, but there's something special about this guy. Those guys that are elite, different. That it's like, man, I don't want to be the one to not make the play, or I just not get there because I didn't anticipate that ball being hit there, or I didn't get a good jump on a ball. Like, he gives me that vibe. He gives me that feeling when I watch him, man. I freaking love Tarek Skubal.
What's the knock on him? Is there one? The complete game thing is starting to bother me a little bit.
Yeah, but maybe once and sometimes maybe it's a little bit too much. Like, but I don't agree with that. But it's like maybe sometimes tries a little bit too hard, too much. You know, and sometimes when you try too hard, sometimes it, you know, you end up getting the worst result. Like, it doesn't go well.
Yeah. I mean, he only walked one the other day.
He only walked one. He's definitely fixed
it. He's only walked 14 batters all year long.
Oh, no. He pounds the strike zone. He's one of those guys that just goes, I mean, right at you.
Yeah.
And he pretty much bullies you in that box.
Yeah.
He basically says,
go ahead and try.
Yeah. I'm to the point where he can almost say, okay, here's a fastball coming. And he's going to spot it well enough where you still don't hit it. And you're like, what? You're big leagues. No, there's some guys that just have those balls that just, you know it's coming and you just can't hit it.
Yeah.
He looks like that to me. He's different. He's different.
How much more challenging is it, do you think, the guy who throws 97, 98 can top a hundo because in his first complete game, his last pitch was close to 103, who also throws a nasty changeup, which, you know, you could talk about a guy's arsenal, but if you got a high heat like that and then you've got a changeup that he's able to dot, that makes it even doubly difficult.
Well, for me, that's probably one of the toughest pitches in the game.
Changeup.
Yeah. Especially when a guy has high velo, and Scuba definitely has that.
Yeah.
The speed differential of those pitches between the fastball and change, it's 15 miles per hour difference. It could be 10 to 12 at times. When it comes out of their hand, because of the mechanics, the arm speed, the spin on the ball, it all looks, it looks like a fastball, man. It looks like a fastball.
It's inviting.
I'm like, okay, here's a guy, I know he likes his fastball, right? Because every guy that has a fastball want to bully you. Mm-hmm. They want to go, okay, you can't hit it. And no, we believe as hitters we could turn the fastball around. Well, for Tarik, it's like, I'm going to be sitting on that fastball and I'm going to get ready to hit it. But then all of a sudden, I'm ready to swing now and it's not there. And I'm like, and I'm just way out in front. Yeah. For me, that's what makes him so effective is that his secondary pitch, that changeup, is one of the best. I used to watch Fernando Rodney. Fastball changeup.
Yeah.
That's it. 100-mile-per-hour fastball, 99-mile-per-hour fastball, and a lethal changeup. Imagine, that's for one inning.
Right.
Imagine dealing with
because he's out of the bullpen. He doesn't need to command four pitches. Guys out of the bullpen need to command two pitches.
No, yes.
Starters generally need to command at least three. And that's a big deal, isn't
it? But think about this. Not only you got to deal with this guy for 7-8 innings.
Yeah.
I mean, he, like you said, he could have went 9.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, he had plenty in the
tank. Yeah, it's not his fault he's only thrown one complete game.
No, he has plenty in the tank, for sure.
Yeah.
But to deal with him for 7, 8, 9 innings, good luck, man.
Yeah, people forget. I know it's a different era, and I know there's a lot of times we can debate, you know, bigger, stronger, faster, all that other stuff. As much as I like Max Scherzer, and I loved him while he was a Tiger, I think he's got 12 complete games. And he's got 216 wins. Well, guess what? I mean, Curt Schilling's got 216 wins. He doesn't have his 3 Cy Youngs, but he's got multiple championships. The thing that bothers me is he's got 83 complete games.
Yeah, but they're not letting pitchers go that deep. With all the arm injuries that we're seeing around the game, the Tommy Johns, I mean, I think there's
– Oh, for crying
I don't
out
want
loud.
To say they coddled him, but they're going to protect
him. Hold on a second.
They're going to protect him.
Protect him from what? They're all getting surgery, and they're not throwing complete games. Where was the surgery for Bob Gibson and Mickey Lolich and Denny McClain and guys like that?
I can't argue that point.
There is no argument. I think that is they're scared of something that hasn't happened. By the way, Tarik Skubal has one complete game, okay? It happened earlier this year.
Yeah.
He's had 2 arm surgeries.
He has.
Okay, so I think that's a convenient scapegoat for Major League Baseball right now. We don't want him to get hurt. So we're going to watch his pitch count.
That's exactly what
they're
doing.
Maybe, just maybe, stop throwing so much in the offseason or in between starts. I don't know how they did it back in the day. It'd be very interesting. But I know they didn't throw as much as they do in the offseason now.
They throw a lot now. Yeah.
So I want you to think about this for a minute. 1968, again, sounds like old guy. Bob Gibson threw 3 straight months of complete games.
I know.
Two and change, but I round up, of complete games. We got guys who don't throw complete games at all. Max Scherzer in 2013, 2014, first year in Washington, he had thrown 1 complete game as a Tiger.
Yeah.
His first year in Washington, he led the league in complete games with 4. Bob Gibson did that in 1 month in 1968. He didn't have arm problems.
Well, we're in this day and age where it is. It's I mean, we got to a point where he's like, well, it's 5 and dive. Guys are going to
take
5 innings and then they're out.
That's right.
And then it becomes a bullpen game. And I think because now the bullpens is such a focal point,
mm-hmm.
in order to win championships, you've got to have guys in the bullpen, different guys.
Yeah.
And there's just the specialties. You know, you got your left-handed specialties. Only gets lefties, mostly gets lefty, tough lefties out. Mm-hmm. And you got your slider guy. I just think there's so many bullpen arms now that it's become a bullpen game. And so I think that's why you're seeing guys go five, go six, and then next thing you know, they're calling, hey, give me the lefty against Bryce Harper. I'm not mad at you. Think about this too, Shep. Once you see a guy, I'd say that third time, see him a couple times, a third time, man, I feel pretty good in there, though.
Yeah, Kansas City made that really popular, right? Wade Davis and Kelvin Herrera and Greg Holland. Okay. So they made it a six-inning game is what they did, and that's fine. So you're right, five and dive. I get that if you're at the back end of my rotation. Okay. When I got the top of my rotation.
Your top dog.
What I'm asking you this, and this is an easy thing to ask and not always an easy thing to answer if you're a fan. Who's better than Tarek Skubal out of my bullpen?
I bet you a lot of fans are going to say that. I guarantee you there was a lot of fans at that game last night, in which there were. Comerica Park was on fire.
Yeah.
I guarantee you they were pissed that Tarek Skubal didn't go back out.
Sure.
In the eighth inning.
And I understand it.
And I'm still, I mean, that's it. Now obviously been a big fan of baseball, but now watching a lot of baseball, I was kind of thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, damn it.
Like, how many pitches is enough?
Like
94.
94, But again, I think in baseball, and this is not just a Tiger, this is around the game, that 100-pitch mark, it's like 100 pitches, and then they're done.
I don't get it. I really don't. But
it's a long season, Shep. Like, crying out loud. They're trying to make sure these guys are healthy and stronger down the stretch. Maybe they got a chance to win the championship here. So maybe they're just saying, okay, Skubal, you've already dominated.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, take a seat. We're going to save some of those innings, some of those meaning, because you know, listen, playoffs is meaningful innings. They're going to be, they're stressful, high stress in every pitch. So maybe that's the mindset. Maybe that's the thinking. Let's just this game's pretty much in the bag. You can't stay in the bag because you got to play 27 out. But you feel good about your guys in the bullpen that can come in and get you six outs. Okay?
I get it. I really do. I think that's
what the mindset is.
I just don't like it. And then my request is always, how many pitches is enough? Right? I mean, it's
you're a baseball player. You're one of those guys, dude. You really are.
I want horses.
You'll be irritating to sit and watch a game with.
For sure.
What is he not playing? Why is he not in there?
I want horses.
You do.
I'm sorry. I want guys who play every day. I want every position players, right? And I want my starting pitchers to go deep into games. And
deep
I think,
as they can go,
I think
right?
it helps you. I do. I think it really helps
you. It saves the
you.
Bullpen for sure when you have a guy that can go deep and consistently go deep. And Tarek's that guy, but
look, I'm not.
The game's not going to let him do it.
I agree. I'm not asking you to have a guy go deep when he's got seven strikeouts, six walks, and he's scattered six hits.
Right.
We're talking about a guy who had 13 strikeouts, struck out eight of the first nine batters, including seven in a row, and had Minnesota sucking their thumb in the dugout, wanting to go home as quickly as possible. That's what I'm referring to, okay? Don't tell me that, well, the third time through, I'd rather face Tarek Skubal than Will Vest. Bullshit. You wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I'd rather face.
I think most people would rather take the bullpen. And that's no offense to Will Vest.
No, he's
really
been great
effective.
This year, too.
He's been really good.
But so it's not Tarek Skubal.
If you look at Tigers pitching lore, Hal Newhouser won two MVPs.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey Lolich did something no man has ever done in World Series history in 1968. Denny McClain has done something no man has done since at 31 wins. Justin Verlander, you played with and said, I literally think he could throw a no-hitter
every
single
really
day. And Max Scherzer. I'm not asking you to say he's better than them. He's in that realm. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, he's headed in that direction. There's no question about that. I mean, again, when he's pitching, I look and I say, oh, Skubal, I'm watching. You just never know what's going to happen. History can be made.
I would tell you this. At $10 million, and this might cause a lot of people to choke on the popcorn here to imagine. At $10 million, he's a hell of a deal.
Yes, he is. He's going to get paid, though, here soon.
Well, he's going to get paid a lot. He's worth four times that.
Yeah.
In baseball standards.
In baseball standards.
Okay.
And that's where he's headed.
If Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer could command $40 million for a season, and I think it was 43.
Yeah, later in their career, too.
If I'm Tarek Skubal's agent, and I'm not, but if I were, knock, 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 here's the going rate.
So that brings up a question then. Because you know he has Scott Boras as his agent, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So you know it's going to be challenging for the Tigers.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
Does he sign back? Does he stay here? Because he loves it here. Do you think, but just your opinion.
Yeah.
Do you think he stays?
There's a lot of guys who have loved it here.
That is true.
Okay. If you love it here, show me you love it here.
That's No, you can't do that.
And you can't. Right. I was just going
to
say.
Because the players, they're not going to allow you to do that.
Well, they allowed Jose Ramirez to do it.
No, they did not like that.
I didn't say they liked it. I said they allowed it.
They're just saying that you're ruining it for the guys coming behind you.
That's correct.
Yeah. And so Jose Ramirez, you want to talk about a deal.
Yeah. Unbelievable. That's like $17 million, and Ramirez is a little bit more for Cleveland. And then, of course, fans will ask, how much is enough? If I'm Tarik Skubal, and everybody knows baseball, you have a window, right? You have a window. He's going to be 29/30 because you have control of 6 years.
6 years, yep.
Right? Arbitration eligible included in there. Won the arbitration, got $10 million last year. He'll get much more than that this coming year because it looks like he'll win another Cy Young. The wins above replacement are really impressive, too. The question is, how much would get it done now? Or will Scott Boras take him to the limit, not an Eagles song, and I just mean take him to the limit. Will he take him to the limit and say, now you're going to have to pony up?
I think he takes him to the limit. And if you go, look at his track record. He takes his guys to the limit.
Yes.
He forces the teams to cowboy up or pony up. And it's not going to be any different when it comes time for Tarik Skubal.
I don't think it's a question of whether or not Skubal would want to be here.
He would want to be here.
The question is whether or not the Tigers can afford to make sure he is here. Or would you use that type of contract, which this is a dissenting opinion. Not many people are going to agree with me. I save that kind of cash for everyday players, not for guys who factor in, 13% of the season?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? 32 starts, 162 games. Okay, not great.
I like the everyday guys, too.
I do, too.
But, it's been proven you win. You win with pitching.
Yeah.
And you got to have them. And it's going to cost you. Mm-hmm. So I'm along the lines of thinking, I understand where you're coming from when you say, I like a position player. I do too. I want an everyday guy that got to impact and impact the game every day. But man, to have a guy like Tarik Skubal at the top of my rotation, man, I'm taking that. I'm ponying up. I don't care how much it costs me. I want to keep him.
Okay. I would argue the Dodgers a year ago didn't win solely with pitching. Their money was spent on, obviously, Ohtani, who was supposed to do both, but has just gotten back into it. Freeman, Betts, and players like that.
Yeah, they slug. There's no question they slug. Yeah. But that's some really good pitching over there.
Yeah, and then they added to it.
Yeah,
and that's who you're going to have to outbid. You're going to have to outbid
Dodgers,
teams like the Dodgers,
Yankees,
Mets, Phillies, Braves, teams like that.
Do you feel like we're in a market though where we? I feel like for one guy, you can pony up. But they've made that – I don't call it a mistake. Well, we call it a mistake because they've made some mistakes like that in the past where you sign the guys to the big deals and they don't always pan out. I think around Major League Baseball, maybe not the Tigers in particular, but Major League Baseball, you see a lot of these guys sign big deals and you're not
– And some of them do work out. You know, the Bryce Harper thing, even though they haven't won a championship,
out?
I think it's worked out. Yeah, he's won MVPs. I mean, I think he's a special player. I think the Yankees, it's worked out for Aaron Judge, even though he struggled in the World Series a year ago. You got to get there first, and he helped them get there for sure.
But wouldn't you like to spread that out, though? I mean, instead of playing one guy, you pay five.
So I've always said this, Simo. Tell me if you think I'm wrong. When people talk about Detroit, they talk about markets. And I think it's kind of funny to me because Detroit, when you say market, usually it's TV market. Detroit's a top 11 market. Miami's a bigger market. Mm-hmm. They don't spend any money.
Okay,
so it's about how many fannies are in the seats, and this year they'll have over 2 million, all right? Can you afford it? The bigger problem for markets like Detroit, and it's bigger than Kansas City, it's bigger than Pittsburgh, don't give me that stuff, is you can't afford to miss.
Yes.
If you miss, it's hard for you to recover. Teams like New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, if they miss, it doesn't send them reeling.
No, not at all.
You miss with Javier Baez, what does it do to you?
It puts you back.
It puts you back. So I'm not saying you would miss with Tarik Skubal. If you're going to take that money, package it up, get a couple of other guys who are going to help you right away, that's one thing. We'd have to see how they would handle it. But how do you replace a guy like Tarik Skubal? Because they don't necessarily have that in the system right now either.
You don't. Yeah. You don't. It's like, how do you replace Verlander? You don't. Yeah. How do you replace Max Scherzer? I mean, do you? I mean, it's these guys are so they're so elite that you just don't replace them. You hope some guys that are coming along in the minor leagues, you know, can be half of what they are.
Sure.
But you're not going to get those guys, so you don't want to lose a guy like that. And then he becomes a fan favorite. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what's heartbreaking for me if I'm as a fan. It's like you fall in love with your guys. And next thing you know, you can't afford to keep them because they've outplayed their contracts. And then they're moving on. And it's just like a little piece of you dies, a little piece of you leaves with them mm-hmm. when they go.
Yeah, look, we've seen greats in this town and every town, okay? If certain guys can get traded and move on, if Joe Montana can move on from San Francisco to Kansas City, Wayne Gretzky can leave Edmonton and go to Los Angeles, if Willie Mays doesn't retire as a Giant, we've seen some of the Giants. We thought that way with Verlander, didn't we?
Yeah,
and now there's an open question. When he goes into the Hall of Fame, will he be an Astro or will he be a Tiger? So I get it, okay, because I remember when the Tigers, it hurt me so much when Lance Parrish left for Philadelphia. I was pissed off like you wouldn't believe, all right? But we've seen this happen in sports, and Tarek Skubal might be one of those guys. I don't know.
But I don't remember. Matter of fact, you bring up Joe Montana. He's a 49er. I don't even remember him playing for Kansas City. What are you talking about?
Let him to the AFC Championship game. Yeah, I think his first year there.
I know.
Unbelievable Monday night game against John Elway and the Broncos. All right, we are brought to you by Imagine Theaters, and we're here at the Palladium in Birmingham like we always are. They've got plenty of movies out for which you to see. Let's talk about comedy movies. What's your favorite comedy of all time? Give me your top five.
I don't know of all time. Like this, you can't say all time because I don't know about all time.
Okay. Well, what makes your belly jiggle when you start laughing about comedy movies?
I like comedians.
Just you like comedians. You don't like comedy movies.
I like comedy movies. A lot of them are funny, but I like the guys like Bernie Mac.
Yeah,
the late Bernie Mac, one of the funniest guys. Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart is hilarious.
Yeah,
I watch Kings of Comedy. I don't know if you guys have ever watched Kings of Comedy.
Sure,
but Bernie Mac for me was amazing in that. So that's one of the funniest things for me. This one might surprise you. I'm a Talladega Nice guy. I know. If you're not first, you're last. You know.
I think the kids are the funniest part in that movie.
They are funny in that movie. So that part, that's a funny movie for me.
Yeah, the prayer at the dinner table is pretty damn funny.
That was funny as hell to me.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't have, like, right up, not to say I don't watch movies, and I love watching movies, but I'm an active guy, Shep.
Me and Mama sit down
and we'll watch movies, and she loves movies. She can sit and watch movies all day. Well, I got a little antsy. I got a little ADD or something. I got to keep moving around. So, okay, but that was pretty funny. You tell me.
Let me give you a few. Funny. I don't know if you've seen.
Because I might remember. Right, I might even know about these movies.
Some of these might be a little bit too old. What, Caddyshack? Have you seen
Caddyshack's funny, yes.
Okay, Caddyshack is funny. Animal House is funny.
Animal House is funny.
Always has been funny to me. I love Bachelor Party. I think that's a really funny movie. All right? The Hangover.
The Hangover, is hilarious. I couldn't think of it right off the top of my head. Hangover is funny.
Yeah. How about Wedding Crashers? Okay.
No, I like.
So
that.
Now you're laughing, right? Have you ever seen the movie Horrible Bosses?
No, I have not seen that one.
That's a flippin' funny movie.
Wedding Crashers.
And then let me give you one more. This is an old one, long time ago, but it's flippin' funny, and it stars one of the stars is a former Detroit Lion and Alex Karras. Blazing Saddles.
Blazing
is,
what?
Is Blazing Saddles.
Okay.
All right.
Where's my? Let me put this.
Okay.
In,
I'm telling you, it is not politically correct. But it is funny as hell. I want you to watch that. And you know what, folks? You can always interact with us, too, when you watch these episodes on YouTube or on Twitter or on Spotify. Follow us on all our social media channels. Give us some of yours. We'll repeat them back the following week. Maybe comment on them a little bit later on. Next week, Nate Robertson, a good friend of yours.
Yeah.
Gum Time. What's the goose? The Rally Goose.
The Rally Goose. Yeah.
To me, it got a little old. That's blasphemous for you. That drives you crazy.
It really is. Gum time is a real thing.
Yeah.
Nate Robinson started just firing in Big League Chew in his mouth, and all of a sudden the Tigers start rolling. So it's a thing. So I can't wait to catch up and kind of how it all came about for him and what made him even think about it. So we're going to dive into that next week.
That'll be next week here on Catching Up with Simo and Shep. We hope you can join us. Our thanks to Imagine Theaters for hosting us as always. Our thanks to you for tuning in. Have a great week, everybody.